live from their mountain lair in Colorado Springs. This is the Image Doctors on Iconians Talk Radio.
Hey, everyone. All right, this is Rick Walker.
And I'm Jason Odell. It's August 3rd, 2006, and welcome to another hilarious, as always, episode of The Image Doctors.
Or at least marginally hilarious.
Okay, hilarious in our own minds.
Yeah, we try.
Hope you all liked the live podcast from last time.
And, especially the organ music. That was pretty cool.
It was a neat little touch there. Can't go to the baseball game without some organ music. Yeah. What do we got on the list today?
Oh, couple things. We've gotten a lot of requests over the last couple months to do a segment on flash. You know, how to use the TTL type flash, ITTL, etc., with Nikon cameras. So we're going to spend a fair amount of time on that topic. The other thing that we want to talk about first, you know, here's a message from our sponsor. We want to talk about memberships.
That's right.
And the importance of memberships on the Nikonian site. And, you know, just a few quick things, because a lot of people will ask, you know, about how the site works and everything. Fundamentally, it's a site run by volunteers that includes us. You know, we don't get paid to do the podcast stuff, but it's critically important that we do have people participating as members. And as you may know, we've got silver, gold, and platinum levels.
As well as the basic membership.
Right. A philosophy on the site is we want to make the content, of which there's a lot, you're a Nikon user, available to everyone, so we don't restrict access to the basic content. But what that means is that those who can pay the memberships really do help, that they're the people that enable the site to continue. And it's not an easy thing to do. You'd be surprised at how difficult it is to actually close expenses, and we've got advertising that's out there. Both Jason and I have helped bring that in at times for the site. But memberships are still needed, and that's one of those things that if we get enough of them, you know, could reduce the advertising.
We would love to have the site supported solely by paid memberships, which would then enable us to reduce our reliance on the advertising side of things.
Or at least reduce it a little bit. And we truly are grateful for our sponsors that we do have. But if you enjoy the site, if you enjoy the podcast, I feel a little bit like we're doing a PBS fundraiser here. For those of you in the U.S., you're familiar with that. But that's a good model.
Yeah, really, as our special guest today, we have Jerry Lewis in the studio.
That's
and
right.
He will be telling you
We'll
about
promise
that.
Not to have Jerry Lewis on if you get a membership. But please do look at that. Please contribute. It's a great organization and a great cause.
Yeah, and there's three levels. I mean, a silver paid membership for 1 year is $25.
Not a lot.
That's, you know, about $2, a little over $2 a month. That's really not a lot of money. It allows you some additional features, like you get an image gallery if you want to use it and upload your pictures. It allows you to directly upload images into your posts on the forums. It also enables you to be eligible to sell your gear and post in the I Want to Sell forum, as well as purchase the insurance to cover your photo gear, the Nikonians travel insurance, the Nick Secure. So all of those are just, you know, icing on the cake, but really we need your help to help us.
Yeah, hopefully
meet our
expenses. Do it just because you feel like it's a great organization, great thing to contribute to, which it is.
And if you do it, then we won't have to keep bringing this topic up on
we'll
the Image Doctors.
Stop nagging.
Just shut up right now.
Yeah. Speaking of shutting up, well, shut
let's
up.
Talk about flash. Eh?
Yeah. Let's talk about flash. All right. Why do you use it?
Well, I can think of two reasons why you would use a flash, and some of our experienced listeners will know. I mean, the sort of obvious reason for using a flash is because there's not enough light. You're somewhere indoors. Maybe it's a little dark outside. And you're going to use the flash as the source as a light source to illuminate your subject.
Right. It's the primary
source. Primary light source. This is what people in studios do all the time. They use a strobe or something like that to light up.
Yeah, and it's probably the most common way that flashes are used if you look at all the photographers out there.
Even your little point-and-shoot camera, when it thinks it's too dark, it uses the flash.
So when you're in a big stadium or whatever and you see all the little flashes going off from hundreds of feet away from the subject,
It's futile.
That's what they're trying to do, though.
But that's the idea.
Yeah.
The other use of flash is a little less obvious, and that's fill flash. This is when you have a situation where you might be in very bright light outdoors, But the way that the subject is oriented to the primary light source, in this case usually the sun, is such that there may be shadows on their face and there may be too much dynamic range in your scene. And by adding a little controlled light from your flash to fill in the shadows, so to speak, you can capture more details in the shadows and get an overall more pleasing exposure.
Right, and a good way of looking at this is if you think there's an issue with contrast on your subject and it's a person, there is, because the camera's going to end up recording something that has higher contrast than what your eyes see. Your eyes can handle those differences pretty well and adapt to them, and the camera just seems to magnify them. So,
right.
Fill flash is wonderful if you're taking pictures of people or whatever in the outdoors. It's not limited to just people. You can do some creative things with other subjects, too, to fill in the shadows.
And I suppose from the purely creative standpoint, there's a third reason why you would use flash, and that is it puts you, the photographer, in theory, in complete control of the lighting for your subject. And we'll talk a bit about those scenarios at the end of the...
Yeah, and that's where you get into things like gels and things like that to shift
and studio lighting setups and multiple flashes.
Sure. Okay, so those are the main reasons. Let's talk about one of the most important decisions that you have to make, which is the mode of your flash.
And, right.
And some of this will apply to brand new flashes as well as some of the older ones. The really old ones, not so much. And
if you bought a Nikon Speedlight or have a built-in Speedlight on any camera in the last 10 years, this probably applies.
This will work, right. So the most common settings on flashes these days are TTL, which stands for through the lens, or the matrix balance fill flash mode. Now, there are other settings where you, if you're using something like an FM2 and you don't have through the lens flash metering where the camera controls the flash, or you could even use manual flash where you
directly output the intensity
just one
that
flash
you want.
Setting or maybe multiple flash settings, but you have to vary the aperture on your own. We're not going to focus a lot on those because they can be useful in some circumstances, but what we're really going to hone in on today are the more automated modes.
The TTL mode.
The TTL and the balanced fill flash or matrix balanced fill flash modes. And these are applicable with, like you were saying, most of the flashes made over the last 10 years.
Right.
Now, how do you decide when you're going to use the TTL flash mode versus the balanced fill flash mode?
Some people will first. $20,000 question.
Yeah, and a lot of people start off by just sticking with the default that most flashes will start in, which is the balanced fill flash mode. And that's actually the wrong setting for a lot of situations.
That's right, especially if you're on the indoors.
Yeah, in that situation that we were talking about where the flash is the primary source of light, and it's a dark room or whatever, you actually want to use the TTL flash mode to get the best possible exposure.
And when you couple that with a lens with a D-chip in it, an AFD lens or any of the AFS lenses, and even most of the third-party lenses have the D-chip in them designated in the description, you'll get a really nice exposed subject.
Right.
And think of it this way. In the old days, if you took a picture at a party, let's say you were outside and it was at night and it was dark and you had a person in front of you about 5 feet away, based on the old way of metering a flash, the flash would detect that there's not a lot of light coming back to the camera, even in TTL mode. And it would say, gee, I need to really up the output here. And what you would get would be the camera attempting to expose for this black background that you could never illuminate because it's pitch black night outside, and your subject is now completely washed out. With the D-chip and the new TTL metering modes and the newer cameras, you will nail the exposure on your subject, and the back behind them will just stay black because the camera knows not to worry about that. There's nothing coming from that. Yeah. The subject is what you focused on that's 6 feet away, not infinity.
The way the balanced fill flash mode is intended to work is you've got some other source of light that's really the primary source, and the flash is just filling in the shadows. But the problem that happens is as that primary source gets dimmer and dimmer, and picture going into a dark room, now the flash is ratcheting down its level so it doesn't come across as being the primary source. And then there's a point where there's a problem. Now, honestly, I think it ought to work better than that. There ought to be some threshold where it kicks automatically to the TTL flash mode. Maybe that'll be in a future camera. But right now, realize that that's a problem. So if you're in that darkened room, use the TTL mode.
Right.
Now, if you're outdoors and you're using
different scenario,
for fill flash, use the balanced fill flash mode. That works pretty well.
Now, what I find is the next thing to do, as long as, you know, we're going to start talking about more flash things in a second here, but there's also the camera settings.
Mm-hmm.
Which exposure mode should you use? When I'm using balanced fill flash, when I'm outdoors, I'm perfectly happy to use the aperture priority, you know, any of the automatic exposure modes. But when I move to indoors and I switch to TTL, I will usually what will happen is the camera will default to the lowest applicable shutter speed for the flash, which is usually either a 60th or a 30th of a second.
Well, usually you can set it on the camera with the newer ones.
Yeah, you can give it a threshold. Yeah, but if you haven't, by
default
it's usually around a 30th.
It's a 60th.
Oh,
it's a 60th. And the reason is you go below that and you can have some problems with camera shake.
Okay.
Even though you're using a flash, mm-hmm. you know, if there's a little bit of ambient light around there, you can have some problems. So it's usually the slowest normally is the default.
So a lot of times I'll be indoors and I want to shoot at 1/25th and f8 mm-hmm. because I'm not worried about the background. So I'll put the camera into full manual mode.
Right.
I don't worry that there's – yeah, it's the light meter will tell me you're underexposed here, Jason. But that's okay because the TTL flash, the flash is going to know it's its job to illuminate the subject that I'm focused on.
Yeah, and in that scenario, you're going to have the black background most likely.
Most likely. Yeah, and if I really want
ISO.
Some of the background, I may up the ISO to 200 instead of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that's just personal preference, though. You have to experiment with that.
Right. A thing that is really handy on the flashes that have been made over the last, how long has it been now? Almost 20 years now, which is amazing, is the idea that you can do flash exposure compensation. And what that is varying the setting away from what would have automatically happened.
That's right.
And this works in both TTL mode and in the balanced fill flash mode. But here's the difference between the two. If you use the exposure compensation setting in TTL mode, it's going to take just the straight exposure to illuminate that subject, that, you know, what's thought to believe the correct exposure, and then change it either up or down. You can vary it in terms
plus
of
or
stops.
Minus.
Right. Make it +1, -1, +2, -2.
You're going to see a
whatever
very different effect
do.
In your pictures.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, if you're doing that, you want to use the same thought processes that we talked about when we discussed metering a long time ago with subject tonalities. Is it a light subject? Is it a darker subject? You know, just look in our old podcast. I can't remember the date, but it was on the metering.
It's on our show notes page.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's what happens in the TTL mode. If you're using balanced fill flash, here's what you have to realize is happening. What the balanced fill flash is doing is automatically kicking in exposure compensation based on what it's seeing with the subject. So it may already kick in -1 stop so that it has natural looking shadows that aren't over illuminated. It's not trying to be the primary light source.
It's not the primary light source. That's
right.
So
exactly what amount it uses will vary with the situation. But realize when you're putting in exposure compensation with balanced fill flash, it's on top of what the camera and flash is doing.
It's a more subtle effect is the way it will be.
It can be. But if the camera is doing -1 on its own and then you dial in -1, you have -2 actually.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, and if the camera is doing -1 and you dial in +1, it'll kind of zero it out. So the important thing is it's additive to what the camera and flash is already doing. So just realize that sometimes you'll hear about this magic -1 2/3 setting. That, you know, that's used for a lot of things. That was really intended for the TTL mode as opposed to the balanced fill flash mode. It can still work with the balanced fill flash mode in a lot of settings and situations. It can be the right setting, but it was really intended kind of for the other.
To make a long story short, you get the exposure compensation dial on the camera will affect the scene one way, and it will interact with the exposure compensation that you use in the TTL-BL mode.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in TTL mode, using exposure compensation would affect the flash output, whether you dial it in on the flash or at the camera, because the flash is the primary light source in that case.
Mm-hmm.
So just something, if you've got a digital camera, here's the good news. Just experiment and see what you get. I mean, that's you don't have to waste any film to do this.
Yeah, it makes it pretty easy.
And if you're confused, just send us an email to talkradio@nikonians.org.
Yep. The next
what are some other
thing,
features that we got here?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about slow sync and rear sync. That's, again, one of those things that's popped up, you know, over the last 20 years or so, you know, for the trivia buffs. Showed up in the SB24 that came out, I think, like with the N90 originally or F4. No, 8008. That's what it was.
Way back when. I think I was in high school when that
camera
came out.
Yeah, no doubt. I wasn't very old either. At any rate, at least I'll pretend that. The whole idea here is, you know, we were talking about the black background and stuff like that. Well, what if you don't want a black background? What if you're in a kind of dark situation, but you still want to have that fairly natural look between the primary subject and how it's illuminated along with the background? This is where you can use the slow sync or rear sync features. And we talked about that 60th of a second, or if you override. There to not be a lower limit. So if it needs to
so
be
you could do
1 second,
exposure and
if
then
it needs to be 1 second to balance the background with a flash, it'll do that.
And here's where you might use that. Classic example. You go up to, I used to live in Los Angeles, and one of the great spots to see the city at night is from the Griffith Observatory. It's on the side of the mountain, and you can look out, and at night, there's the skyline of L.A. and the whole Los Angeles basin lit up behind you. Mm-hmm. You want to take a picture of your wife with the night lights of the city behind you. So you need to use a slow exposure to expose for the city, and then the flash pops just to expose your wife.
Right.
So you have this wonderful exposure of your wife standing there, but then the nice black with all the lights of the city behind you.
And you can use the automated exposure settings, you know, aperture preferred.
It works
program.
Just great.
It works really well. It's surprising how well it works.
Yeah, you get those pictures back and you're kind of like, wow, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. And you can get some interesting effects too with the, you know, the flash having frozen the subject because it uses a really short duration. With the background.
Right. Your wife doesn't have to sit there for the full time of the exposure.
You can do some creative things with the background all, you know, blurred and stuff from the slow shutter speed. Yeah.
Now then,
so the difference between the two.
And
then
let's talk about, rear sync. That's
rear sync is a variation on that. It'll allow the slow shutter speeds. The difference is that normally the flash will fire when the shutter curtain opens, you know, at the start of the exposure.
What they call the front curtain.
Mm-hmm. Rear sync fires the flash at the end of the exposure. Now, when would you want to do that? The answer is if you're shooting a subject that's moving and there's enough ambient light to see a little bit of the subject, then the rear sync will look more natural. And the reason is you'll see a subject with the trailing lines behind it, you know, following the path it came from, as opposed to the other way around.
Here's a great way to try this. Go out in the late evening, set your camera to rear curtain sync, and you're going to use your flash. Take a picture of a car with the headlights on coming towards you. I mean, this works with the subject is moving towards you,
mm-hmm.
all right? You use your somewhat long exposure because you're going to get those headlight and taillight trails. If you use front curtain sync, the flash fires, you get it stops the action of the car at the beginning of the exposure, and then the trail lines look like they're coming out of the front of the car, so it looks like the car is going backwards.
Right.
You do a rear curtain sync, you do your long exposure, you get the nice long trails, and then it pops the flash at the end, so then you have the car at its final position where it was in the frame,
and
so everything's behind
it. Looks as it should.
And it looks much more natural. Now, obviously, if the car is in reverse, you'd have a different situation, but we don't go there.
Right, right. So that's slow sync and rear sync, and they're very handy.
Now, what?
Especially slow sync.
What is a good, you know, one of the issues that people have been posting in the forums a lot is they're not getting very good results using auto white balance.
Yeah.
This is for the you digital users out there.
Right.
When they're using auto white balance with the flash, what's a better setting to use?
What I always do, and I know you do this too, is switch to the manual flash white balance setting. And what I'll find is that if I use the auto white balance, which I normally do, on my D2X and D200, I normally shoot with an auto minus 2 setting. It's just a little bit warmer than the normal setting. But what I'll find is with flash, it just comes out too blue looking. It's just too cool. And by switching over to the manual white balance setting, I get results that look more natural, a little bit warmer. The manual white balance setting is kind of like a daylight white balance setting with a little
Kelvin,
bit more red in it.
Yeah,
it's got.
And this works really well, you know, for those indoor shots where the flash is the primary light source. When I'm doing balance fill flash, then I usually leave the white balance auto, and it's okay.
Yeah, because then you're talking about wanting to balance it with the background illumination,
right,
not the flash.
Now there are some special cases where you could use a different white balance, but we would that would be if you're using like a gel to compensate for, say, tungsten or fluorescent lighting.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that one later,
kind of at the end.
Yeah.
There.
Next big topic: bounce flash and diffusers.
Right.
And we talked about one diffuser not too long ago. That was the light sphere thing that you can get.
You can get in the
Nikonian's
Pro Shop. Yep, that's right.
Both of us have one of those. That does work very, very well for getting natural illumination. But let's talk a little bit about bounce first.
Let me explain something before we get into this.
Okay.
Up until this point, everything that we have talked about, you can do with the built-in pop-up flash on your camera, if your camera has that feature.
Right.
Okay. You may be asking yourself, if you are a D70 owner or even a D200 owner, why should I spend the money on something like an SB600 or SB800? If you want to do bounce flash or use a diffuser, this is one reason why you would do that. Because you need a flash that has a swivel tilt head.
And if you want to get natural looking results with a flash, you know, when you're taking photos of people, you want to use one of those approaches.
Right. And I guess we should point out the farther the flash light source is from the lens axis, the more natural the lighting can be, and the less likely you are to get the bane of all flash pictures, which is red eye.
Yeah.
And why do you get red eye so often with your little tiny point and shoot? If you look to see where the flash, the built-in flash, is positioned on those cameras, it's right next to the lens, meaning that light that reflects off your subject's retina is going to be reflected at a, you know, equal angle right back.
Yeah.
You know, this is your old geometry. The angle of incidence equals the angle of reflection. So if you have a really small angle between the light source and the lens, you're going to be reflecting a lot of that red light back into the camera.
It's just going to come straight back.
So get a bigger get a shoe mount flash, which is already going to be taller, or take it a step further, and we'll talk about it a little later. Get your flash off of the camera entirely.
Right. Now,
but let's go back to bounce.
Well, one quick thing while we're on that note, though.
Okay.
Because there's the red eye reduction kind of features.
Which
I
never
use. That you'll
find
in the point and shoot and some of the newer, fancier flashes, even including the SB600 and 800, have that feature too. Now, what is it doing? What it does, and I agree, I don't use it either. What it does is it fires a series of lower power flashes right before the main flash goes off. And the whole idea is it makes the...
It's to annoy your guests.
It's to annoy your guests. It's also to make it so that it takes a while for your shutter to release.
Right, so you miss the shot.
So you miss the critical point. What it's doing is it's making the...
It's attempting to make your pupil contract.
And just like the lens stops down your camera. Same thing happens. So if you have a smaller amount of the retina showing, then red eye is a smaller problem.
Less light is reflected out of your eye. And the idea is that you're probably using that in a fairly dark room where people's pupils are fairly open.
Yeah. So,
but we don't like it.
No, for the reasons mentioned, it does help a little bit. The other thing that you can do, though, is if you can flip on some lights in the room, especially ones that are going to hit your subject, that'll make the pupils contract also.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a way of it helping and not having the problems that we just mentioned. So, anyway, just a little
bit. Now, back to that other topic. Now that we've been sidetracked.
Yeah, and we did a good job getting sidetracked.
Yeah, we're good at that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about bounce and diffusion.
Yep.
Diffusion is probably the easiest one to do. Mm-hmm. This is where you want to spread the light out more naturally. Direct flash from your lights. It's a fairly small light source. It can cast some pretty harsh shadows.
Oh, yeah.
And so what we're always looking for ways is to make that light look more natural. We're trying to control the light. And one way of doing it is to put some sort of diffusing screen, the larger the better typically, in front of the light source to sort of spread it out and soften it.
Right.
And if you buy an SB800, I don't know about the SB600, but it's probably also, you get a diffuser cap,
mm-hmm.
Which will set the flash automatically to its widest zoom setting, spread the light out even more by creating this semi-translucent surface to beam the light to.
And if you're not too far away from a wall, it'll kind of bounce off the wall a little bit,
and it gets
too.
A more natural look.
Yeah.
The shadows aren't nearly
help.
As harsh, and
right.
it softens up and just makes things look a little bit more professional.
Yeah. And like you were saying, the bigger the diffuser, the better. So that's why the light sphere, being bigger than that, does a little bit better
right.
job. And then you can go up even further and use, you know, big diffusion boxes,
soft boxes,
whatever.
And all kinds of. I mean,
right.
you just look online anywhere.
Just depends
and you can
on how fancy
all
you want to
be.
Stuff.
What about bounce?
Well,
that's a little different approach.
Yeah, there you're doing something a little bit different. Again, the concept is you want this big light source. The bigger, the better, at least relative to how it's seen at your subject. So, what if you're standing near a wall? Could you make the wall look like
a
light source?
Right.
And that's what you're doing with bounce. What you do is most of the flashes that we're talking about will swivel, they'll tilt, and what you can do is turn the flash so it's bouncing off of a wall
or
the
ceiling,
if the ceiling's not too high, and onto your subject. And that gives that impression of a really big light source, you know, kind of like a big diffusion box, and you'll get much more natural looking results with using that kind of approach.
And so, in the old days, it was really hard to figure out what your flash output should be.
It was a nightmare.
But with TTL flash nowadays, with any of these newer flashes, with the SB800s, SB28s, you know, if you're using film, or SB28DX, if you've got an older digital body like a D1 series camera,
mm-hmm.
or a D100, it pretty much calculates all this stuff for you, and you don't have to worry about adjusting
really
the output.
Easy.
It's incredibly easy.
And like we were talking about earlier, if you do have a digital camera, just do some experimentation. Try a straight shot. Try a bounce shot and look at the differences. You'll be amazed if you haven't played around with bounce flash much.
Now, there is some minor drawbacks of using bounce, and there's some caveats you got to be careful
right.
in some situations. The first one is if the wall isn't a neutral color, if it's white, if it's not a white wall, if you got a colored wall, you're going to be reflecting
colored light.
Colored light. So if you got a subject next to a green wall, you might not want to do bounce flash there off
right.
of that surface. Pick a different surface. The other thing you can run into is sometimes, especially with ceiling bounce, you can get some pretty
spooky.
With people, you can get some spooky looking pictures. You can get some pretty recessed looking eye sockets because
right.
now the light is coming down from straight above them and it casts unnatural looking shadows into their eye sockets. Sometimes it's not too bad. Like I said, you can do bounce just fine in a lot of situations.
Of course, the most important thing is there has to be a wall or a ceiling relatively close
right.
by.
If you've got a high vaulted ceiling,
it
isn't going to work, so don't even try it.
Yeah. That's the convenience of the diffusers. You don't have to look
exactly.
for those, and it is a little bit more predictable.
So getting a little bit more complicated,
mm-hmm.
we talked about starting with maybe using your built-in flash, and now we've talked about some reasons for using a shoe mount flash, a larger unit, with some advantages there. You can do bounce, you can do swivel, you can maybe add a diffuser dome onto that, or a light sphere or mm-hmm. something else. What about getting your flash off the camera altogether?
Right.
And that's something that you can do with a nice little accessory. The old one was the SC17 sync cord, and they've since come out with a replacement for it. They actually function exactly the same. Yeah. Find yourself a used SC17 on eBay or something, or in our Want to Sell forum, and you know,
and you're set.
They work with all the newest flashes. I use my SB800 with a SC17.
Yeah, and it just got a coiled cord.
It's usually too long, but you know.
Yeah, but that's all right. But they're pretty handy. You can they don't take up a lot of space in your bag, and you can do all sorts of cool. You can look like Joe Photographer holding the flash up in the air,
or even better, get your assistant to hold the flash and point it toward your subject. Yeah. And this is great because now you can have a much more natural looking. People aren't illuminated typically with straight on light. When you just look at someone in a room, there's shadow on one side of their face. That's how people look. Mm-hmm. You shine a flash straight at them.
It's just not
It's just not a natural look. And you take that flash, just move it a foot or two off of the axis of your lens. Hold it in an outstretched arm or something. And you can do this.
And you know, this is where you get into a little bit of psychology and you know, how people are wired fundamentally. What people like to see is light that looks a bit like what they would see from the sun. So the normal expectations are light is coming from above or, you know,
slightly off
to the side or whatever. It's not coming from down below. And some of the other angles can look a little bit odd too. Sometimes that's okay for adding some drama. But what makes people the most comfortable is, you know, somewhat overhead. That's going to have the most natural look.
And, combining a diffuser system with an off-camera flash, you can get some nice soft shit so the shadows aren't harsh. You know, by definition, the smaller the point of light, the point source of light is, the more sort of harsh the shadows end up looking. Mm-hmm. So you want to spread that out if you can. You know, for portrait, we're talking about portrait work now, obviously.
Right.
Now, that's the easiest way to get your camera, your flash off the camera.
Well, yeah, and one other thing we should talk about, macro.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to shoot flash with macro, which can be very handy in a lot of circumstances, that's another situation where that extension cord will work well for you.
And maybe when we do a macro episode.
Well, we've done that in the past.
Bit, you know, we talk.
We could talk a little bit more about flash, macro flash at some point.
But we don't have time today.
Not right away.
That's a whole other topic.
It is.
Now, for those of you who have a D70 digital camera or an F6 film camera, if I'm not mistaken, or any camera that takes advantage of the SB800s, the Nikon's ITTL system, they also have something called the Creative Lighting System, CLS.
Right.
And this is really, really neat because...
To use the absolute technical term,
it's
neat.
It's cool. Or if you're from Northern California, it's hella cool. You can use multiple flashes off of the camera. And depending on the camera that you have, the body that you have, you can control the output of up to, I think, well, technically an unlimited number of flashes. But realistically speaking, you know, probably like 8 or 9 separate speed lights in groups and up to, I think, 3 groups.
And no cords.
And if, let's say, for example, you're a D70 user or a D200 user where you've got that little pop-up flash, you can set that flash to trigger the main SB600 or SB800 as the slave. And you can even set your little pop-up flash so that it doesn't contribute to the image, to the exposure in any way. It's just sending pulses of light to trigger the off-camera flash wirelessly.
And that's what's called the commander mode.
In commander mode. And in the true whiz-bang fashion that is, you know, truly technical genius, in the time between you pushing the shutter button and there's pulses of light going off, the camera will calculate the proper exposure for all of the flashes in your series, in your groups.
And, by the way, you can even set your exposure compensation for those flashes that aren't even connected.
From your camera.
From the camera.
Or from the SB800.
So you can have your primary set one way, your secondary set another way. It's amazing.
And I just tried this for the first time a few weeks ago, and I have to say, it
is amazing.
It is a serious source of NAS. Because if you do this and you try it, you may very well find yourself wanting to buy a few more SP-800s.
That's just a hypothetical.
Hypothetically speaking, you might want to do that.
Yeah,
so
it
can be dangerous. It can be dangerous. I know people who have done that after seeing these demonstrations. If you really want to see how this works, we recommend the Nikon School DVD by Joe McNally called The Speed of Light. That's the title of the DVD, and I think it's like $20 at the Nikon Mall online.
Yeah, it's not that much. It's not going to have excruciating detail. No, it's not technical.
But it does show you what you can do.
It'll get you excited about the concept and give you some ideas for how it can be used.
But in the simplest form, for all you D70 and D200 users out there, you could have the camera in your right hand with the little pop-up deployed as a master commander, an SB600 or 800 in your left hand, just holding out, you know, a few feet away from your subject, point, click, very natural portrait-looking light. Maybe you've got a diffuser on there, no cord needed. And if you've got such thing as an assistant to help you, you hold two of these flashes towards the subject, you can really start to have some fun. You can set up backlighting situations. You can have a different group of flashes, and you can have up to three groups. If you use an SB-800 as the commander, you can have three groups of flashes, banks A, B, and C. You can set different channels. Let's say you're in a studio situation where you maybe got two little studio setups set up, two different backdrops, an arrangement of flashes in the corner over here, and then another arrangement on the other side of the room. You set one set of your slaves to be channel one. And you set the other set of your slaves to channel two. When you go over to the other setup, you just dial in, okay, now I'm commanding channel two. So you're not flashing the other, you know, set of studio strobes. Or maybe you have two different people working in the same room. You can share SV-800s or use them on different – the possibilities of this stuff is really amazing.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And you get full control over exposure compensation from +3 to -3 EV in 1/3 EV steps on each of the three banks independently of each other.
One of the things that Nikon has done so well on for a very long time is flash.
Flash and flash metering.
And this is just yet another example of how well they do something. So
now, there are some limitations. I mean, you can't do this from an infinite distance. You want to sort of be within 30 feet.
Yeah.
It certainly works better indoors where there are surfaces to bounce the light and reflect it. You have to be within certain... You know, the
angles of view.
The there's a little sensor on the side of the SB-800 or 600 that's going to pick up the commander's light beams.
But in practical terms,
it works
wonderfully.
So good.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Now, one brief thing, because we're not going to talk a whole lot about it.
A little product plug here.
But it's we're contributing to your delinquency in terms of. But for macro stuff, if you're seriously into flash for macro. And by the way, you can get by pretty well with just the standard flashes, but if you're seriously into it, Nikon has a wonderful system that hasn't been out that long. It's called the R1C1.
Yeah, it was announced at the same time the D200
flash
last
system.
Year.
And it takes advantage of all that wireless stuff and allows you to clip things on a ring going around your lens and have these little tiny flash units, I mean, incredibly small, that you can hold off with your hand and illuminate some flowers from behind and all that kind of stuff. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, my dad just bought that one. The dad, I want to report on the R1C1 unit soon.
Well, I know someone else that could give you one too. So
someone in this room
could be.
Someone in this room, not me.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk more about that some other future time. But any other things that we should talk about? One last thing. I should have mentioned this when we were going over the white balance stuff for film users, because we don't want to forget them ever. One thing that can be nice is the flash. The light coming off of a flash can be a bit cool. So one of the things that you can do to compensate for that if you're using film is, you know, either put some sort of warming gel on the flash a little bit, or if the flash is the primary source of light, use something like an 81A warming filter, mm-hmm. or the one I like the best, which is the Nikon A2. And it's not because of the brand. It's because it's not as yellowish.
Balance.
It's a little bit more of a magenta color.
Right.
I think it looks a little bit more natural with people.
And I guess we should point out that if you go out and buy an SB-800, it does come with a couple little extra accessories. Mm-hmm. One is a gel pack.
Right.
It comes with the two most commonly used gels. I mean, you can. I mean, they look like they're really flimsy little plastic things, but they work just fine. One is for fluorescent lights. It's a green gel. And the other one is for tungsten lighting. It's an orange gel. You can use that one as a warming gel if you want. Mm-hmm. In those situations, if you're in a fluorescently lit room and you're shooting with the green gel, in this particular case, we should point out you'll want to set the white balance on your camera to the fluorescent mode.
Right.
Or if you're shooting in tungsten lighting and using the tungsten gel, the orange one, set it to tungsten lighting. That way everything will be in balance. The tungsten lighting... You won't have a mixed lighting situation in that case.
Yeah, because those look ugly and there's not much you can do with
mixed
them.
Lighting is just hard.
Yeah.
So you can do that. It also comes with a little foot that you like a little stand
right.
that it slides in on
have
the hot shoe.
An assistant.
And if you want to sit an SB-800 up on a bookshelf or something and point them around, it's very useful. And that little stand also has a standard thread, like a tripod head thread.
Right.
So if you've got a tripod, extra tripod lying around with a head on it, you can, with a screw mount, you can attach that that on there. If you want to get fancier than that, you know, do a little shopping and check out the various light stand options for shoe mount flash.
Mm-hmm.
But and there's a lot of them. There's too many to go into.
Yeah. Okay.
So we had a – that was good. That was a lot of stuff for our listeners today.
Yeah. Yep.
So
so hopefully that helped.
We hope so.
Yep.
We've had fun. And as always, don't forget that we will post all of the links to everything we've talked about on our show notes page over at podcasts.niconians.org.
And don't forget about the membership stuff we talked
please,
about.
Please consider at least becoming a silver member.
It's not much money.
It's not a lot to do, and the community does give back so much that I think it's worth it. And so until next time, we are the Image Doctors signing off.
Bye-bye.